Good morning. It's Monday, July 3rd. I'm Bob Hendricks, the producer of Mountain Money. Both Doug Wells and Renee Bodley out of the studio on assignment today, so we have a special program for you. But first, the weather. Warm, 86 degrees for a high today. For Independence Day, 88. A high of 90 on Wednesday, 89 on Thursday, and 88 on Friday. And then for the Heber Valley, let's update the computer here and see what they're talking about. 92 today in Heber, 95 on the 4th, 96 on Wednesday, 96 on Thursday, and 95 on Friday. It's 61 degrees in Heber in Heber at this hour. And Park City, we're at 69 degrees already. More coming up. Great program for you today. Stay tuned. KPCW.
Gordo here.
And I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 1974, we've been part of this community with shared ride, private van, and SUV service for our customers.
Reservations available at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
We have a special holiday edition of Mountain Money for you today. We're showcasing some of the business interviews from other KPCW programming. In the next hour, you'll hear from the CEO of Skull Candy, Jason Hodell, who was recently on the KPCW Local News Hour talking to News Director Leslie Thatcher about the grand opening of Skull Candy's headquarters out at Kimball Junction. Then we'll feature another newcomer in the Park City community, the Electric Express. The Express is made up of six electric buses made by Proterra. We'll hear from the company's business development director about these buses and a big step for Park City's environmental goals. And finally, what is a golf park? Well, it's an innovative idea by Jack Nicklaus, and there's one on the Wasatch Back. We'll end the show with a segment about this unique way to play golf that may appeal to a whole new generation of golfers. And get this, you can even bring your dog on the course with you. More after this.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and company support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Thousands of people attended Skull Candy's grand opening party on Friday, June 23rd. That morning, the CEO of the company came to the KPCW studios and appeared on the local news hour with News Director Leslie Thatcher. Here is that interview.
Well, the worldwide headquarters for Skull Candy are open in the studio to tell us about the new facility as well as the future for the company is CEO Jason Hodell. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us what we've got built out there at the Boyer Tech building just west of the visitor information booth.
So that's our worldwide headquarters. We definitely wanted to have our headquarters stay in Park City. We feel like it's kind of a monument for Park City, and hopefully it's going to bring more businesses here. And also the county and the city want to build up that tech corridor. And so we're kind of the first landmark tenant to enter into that row. And we've had a lot of folks coming by and checking out our building because they like the location so much. So hopefully it brings more businesses here.
Yeah. So what have you got out there? I mean, how big?
Oh, it's very large. It's about 20,000 square feet, two floors. The first floor has a large party area. You know, there's places for the employees to work out, to hang out. There's a lounge, a cafeteria, and then upstairs are all the offices. And it's a very open environment. Really don't have very many offices, and the ones that we do have are glass walls. So incredibly transparent. And, you know, people talk over the desks to each other, so you don't email each other, you just talk. You know, and that really helps collaboration and people working together. And it picks up the energy in the office. You know, it's very open, as you know. And so the morning light just streams in and literally lights up the office. And that energy that you get when you come on in the morning and you get your cup of coffee, it's powerful. And it's really picked us up.
Yeah. How many employees do you have working there?
About 120 right now.
Yeah. And is that really everything happens there except for the manufacturing of the products?
No. So think of it as our global headquarters for sales, marketing, product, supply chain, finance, and that sort of thing. But then we also have five global offices in major centers, London, Zurich, Tokyo, Vancouver. And that's where, you know, sales and marketing offices focus on the regions, and then manufacturing's in China.
Okay.
Yep.
So talk a little bit about just the construction of the building. You know, we hear so much about LEED certified and energy efficiency. What are some of the highlights there?
Well, definitely it's LEED certified. We're really proud of that and trying to lead the way. You know, it's funny, it's LEED certified, but it's as bright as any building. Those lights are really a beacon as you're driving down the highway and you see it from afar. And in the evening, we're allowed to light up the Skullcandy logo and you can see it from about 2 miles away. So, you know, gives us some branding, especially around times like Sundance, where you have a lot of influencers coming into town and we can talk about our brand.
All right. So you've been in there for how long?
Oh, about 3 months.
Oh, wow. Brand okay. New. And what, did you just move from across 224? Is that where you were previously?
That's right. We were right next to Basin Recreation Center.
Yeah. Yep. So why was it important that you guys had your own building?
Well, we over time, we'd expanded on the three different floors of that building, but on each floor, we didn't have the whole floor. So you can imagine we were stepping on other businesses around us. And, you know, whenever you've got a group on the first floor of a building and another group on the third, you'd be surprised how little they actually see each other at the office, unless there's a meeting or something. So by moving into one building and literally having everybody on the same floor, you get this natural connectivity and energy, like I was talking about earlier, that can be very powerful for a business.
All right. So yep. I think what Skullcandy is best known for are its headphones, its earbuds,
right.
Things like that. I mean, mm-hmm. Do you have some kind of amazing sound system within the office itself?
Yeah. So there's an anechoic chamber that helps you test your audio equipment. And it's actually the only private chamber in Utah and one of just a few west of the Mississippi River. And the other two in Utah are owned by universities. So from a commercial perspective, whenever potential audio partners run through the office, they're seeing equipment and R&D capabilities that are unique. And that helps us sell Utah, it helps us sell Park City, and obviously helps us sell Skullcandy.
All right. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved in audio headgear?
Well, I've been with the company for about 4 years now, and I started out as the CFO, so I was the finance guy. And we were a public company at the time. And as you know, being in the public markets is challenging. And so kind of lived that life for 3 years. Along the way, I became the COO. So got more involved with the operations of the business, supply chain, inventory, that sort of thing. And then we were bought in October. And in the transition to becoming a private company and privately owned by Mill Road Capital, there was a management changeover and I became the CEO.
Wow. Well, congratulations yep. on that. Is the founder of the company, Rick Alden, still part of this? Or
absolutely.
He's long...
Yeah, he's in the office every so often. I think what you have to understand is there's very few people in the world that have started brands as large and globally recognized as Skullcandy. There's only a handful. And he did it. And so there's some inspiration and some magic there that he understands intuitively, that bringing him in and having him look at the current products and the marketing efforts and what we're doing around music and all these things, absolutely there's a point of view there that's important for the company. And then secondly, he'll be there tonight. Tonight's our grand opening of our headquarters. Park City's invited. There's flyers all over the place, so I'm sure you've probably seen them yourself. But doors open at 6:30 and he'll be there. So you can come on by and high-five him.
Okay. So as you mentioned, I mean, you started when the company had gone public, but it
right.
did start as a private company.
That's right.
When public, it's now private again. I
yeah.
mean, can you talk about some of the pros and cons of why you would do that?
Well, being public is not easy. And there's a level of reporting and the markets and keeping the markets informed and the analysts and how they're feeling about you. And it creates a lot of work for a small company. So think lawyers and consultants and accountants and then auditors and then you have the reporting cycle and everything has to be done perfectly. You can't make any mistakes for the SEC. Now that creates a lot of overhead for small businesses. And so you kind of step back and you're like, okay, Skullcandy, about a $300 million a year business, which sounds big when I say it like that, but that's really small in the big scheme of things. Does it really make sense to bear the millions of dollars of costs, you know, to stay public? And a lot of people say, no, it doesn't. So the private equity firm came on in, and of course they take those costs out and it helps you become more lean and mean, but really it helps you focus on what's really important, which is the brand and the products and not this other thing.
Yeah. So it was really interesting. I mean, because this all kind of took place. We had one company interested in buying it. That kind of fell through. And then, as you mentioned, the Mill Road Capital being the successful purchaser of it. But this is just as the company was starting construction of the new
That's
building.
Right.
That had to be a little bit nerve-wracking, no?
It was nerve-wracking. Now, the Incipio deal, it didn't really fall through. It became an auction. And in the auction, they put in their bid. You know, it's a public market, so the whole world can see. And then Mill Road came in over the top, which was nice because, you know, all shareholders won a little bit more. And you can imagine within this auction, there's many players. There's lots of bidders. There's people that are interested. So I think the most nerve-wracking part of that piece was it wasn't that the building was being built and there was uncertainty about the move and whatnot. It was more just finding our suitor, getting set up with them, and then getting on with the future, you know?
Yeah. So was it pretty seamless for you then? I mean, did you see changes as a result of the purchase?
The transaction? Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say seamless. There's been a lot of changes over the past 6 months. In these kind of deals, there's always changes in people because some people want to move on to the next thing. There's other challenges. Mill Road has different ideas about how to run the business. So, of course, the owners can dictate the course. You know, that's the whole point of it. So over the past 6 months, we've made changes. I think the most notable shift in brand strategy, if you watch Skull Candy and you see what we do on social media and the website and whatnot, is we are trying to produce our own high-end content, music content, and then stream it live over the internet. So almost producing a TV show and then using the medium of Facebook Live for hundreds of thousands of people to view it. And of course, you can measure that. You can see all the viewers. And those are fans of Skull Candy and they're fans of music. And I think the learning has been that people genuinely, especially young people, they genuinely enjoy being exposed to these artists that they never saw before. And we actually allow them to vote on which band they want to put on a rock tour. So a little bit of drama there around who's going to win. And there's this discovery element that can be kind of powerful. So discovery around music, but then discovery around the technology of the products. Right now, one of our best sellers is the Crusher headphone. And it's the Bluetooth Crusher headphone. And what makes it special is that the technology of the headphone literally vibrates on your head with the bass. You can turn it off if it bothers you, but the kids love it. You know, not only for listening to bass to really enhance that experience, like the front row of a concert, but also if you're playing a video game and, you know, you want to feel the action around you. So it's a very popular headphone. But that's an example where people can discover new technology in the products, along with the discovery of the brand around music and sports and all these other things we do.
Yeah, so in terms of the bands that you're going to, I mean, these are, you haven't paying marketing and licensing fees for them, or these guys are just like, they're brand new and you're kind of exposing them to the market? You're becoming the producer in the sense?
Well, in a way, we're helping them be discovered because, for instance, we have 2.1 million Facebook fans, people that watch our feed and check in and whatnot. And so those 2.1 million people will see this new band that we discover, bring it forth. And if they like it, they can vote for that band and then maybe they'll win a slot on a national tour that's going on right now all summer long. So it's more about discovering bands they don't know.
Oh, so you have just a department that goes out and explores new music, huh?
That's right. And we have partners that help us too.
Sure. Yep. So what's the company's bread and butter? I mean, is it still the small earbud? Is that where the...
Bread and butter's earbuds. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody loses them. Everybody has a dozen pairs somewhere in their house, but they can't find them. So we are number one in that market, frankly. And then in wireless, the Bluetooth market, that's the market that's really growing right now. That's over doubling every year. And we are a market leader under $100 in both headphones and earphones. We have the number one styles in two of those price bands. So, you know, the bread and butter is still strong. You know, think of it as always there. It's kind of steady. Not really big growth, but, you know, wouldn't make sense for it to be growing that much on the earbud side. But on the wireless side, the growth there is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, my favorite product that you guys do is a wireless speaker, and it's just it's a small, but it's got, I think, amazing sound for it.
Is it the Barricade or the Air Raid? Do you remember?
The Air Raid.
Air Raid, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
Yep.
That's all I need for a room, right?
Right.
But is that, let's talk, you mentioned kind of the headphone bass vibration. What are some of the other new technology that we should expect to see?
Well, on the speakers themselves, our positioning there is to make it more rugged than the other speakers and make it louder than the other speakers. And so that's that experience you're talking about there. But at the same time, the new Barricade, if you drop it in the hot tub, it's fine. It floats and you can take it out. So, you know, there's a ruggedness. You can take it to the beach, not worry about it. But on the headphone side of the equation, haptic technology is what that's called when it vibrates with the bass. And kids love it, like I talked about. But, you know, future development right now, it's more focused around making it easier for people when they're on the go to enjoy the content. So imagine you're on a bike, okay? If you're on a bike, you really don't want to drown out all of the noise around you because you want to hear the car coming. So figuring out elegant ways to both let people enjoy the music, but then hear the sound around them, those are engineering challenges that we're trying to solve and bring a product to market that solves that problem. And there's lots of examples like this. You know, but active noise cancellation is very popular. So trying to figure out how to do what Bose does better than anybody and weave it into our product lineup just the right way, that's something we're thinking about as well.
Cool. Yeah. So I saw a release just recently that the company's got a new partnership with pro surfer Coco Ho. Mm-hmm. So you'll have waterproof buds for her use then? Or is that something in the
future? We're going to do our best. Yes. Surfers love music too. Yeah, right. That's an interesting challenge though, to make something that's truly waterproof in an earbud. But the answer is yes.
Yeah. And then why use athletes then to market your products? Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. What's the connection there?
Well, the philosophy is when you've got a lifestyle brand, and Skull Candy, you know, think of the big audio brands, JVC, LG, Sony. Those are not really lifestyle brands. When you think of them, you think more technology, you know. Now, Beats is a lifestyle brand, but the lifestyle that it espouses is very different from the positioning that we're trying to have. And the positioning we have, of course, it started with action sports, surf, skate, snow. Now it's become more broader. It's more of a celebration of youth culture generally. And now we have the music angle that we weaved in and more around emerging music. But that special sauce you get there of the combination of lifestyle sports, mountain and beach lifestyles, and then music, there's magic there. And what ambassadors can do, for instance, okay, Kyrie Irving is one of our ambassadors. Okay, Kyrie Irving, when he talks on social media, 13 million people hear him loud and clear. Okay, that's way bigger as an audience than Skull Candy can reach itself. So Kyrie Irving also loves to skateboard, and he likes Skull Candy. He likes our products. So weaving him into our market strategies and our product strategies and doing things with him, and then having him talk about it as a Skull Candy ambassador, that becomes way more important and powerful than really almost anything we could do ourselves. You add up all of the, we call them megaphones. These are megaphones that we talk to the world about our brand and our lifestyle, right? You add up all of those, we actually can touch over 40 million people. That's like a Super Bowl commercial, you know, just to put it in perspective. But it's something that we're weaving together using the voice of these ambassadors. And the truth is, to a 16-year-old boy like my son, they care much more about what Mick Fanning thinks, or Kyrie thinks, or their famous snowboarder, you know, or Coco Ho. They care much more about what they think and the way they live than anybody in our office. So that becomes the top of the pyramid, as you will, for the ambassadors to talk about this vision, and then for all of their fans to kind of soak it up, and it becomes part of their ethos as well.
Cool. All right. Thanks for your time, Jason.
Cheers.
That interview first aired on KPCW's Local News Hour on Friday, June 23rd. Well, coming up, we'll talk about the new Electric Express in Park City after this.
Support of KPCW comes from Zions Bank Family Business Services. Zions Bank, we haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. More information available online at zionsbank.com.
Well, it's 9:26, Mountain Money. I'm Bob Hendricks. Both Doug and Renee off today on assignment. Have you seen the new Electric Express in Park City? It's made up of six buses that go from Kimball Junction to the Main Street Transportation Center in Old Town. The route is only two stops, one at Cabrillet at the Canyons, the other at Fresh Market on Park Avenue. The idea is to give riders a faster way to get from Old Town to Kimball Junction. The buses are made by Proterra, and the business development director of the company, Alan Westenskow, was on KPCW's Cool Science Radio the other day, and talking to co-hosts Lynn Ware Peak and John Wells. Here is that interview.
So the last time we spoke to you, which was about a year ago, the grants had not been approved, and now they have, and the county has stepped up as well, and all of this is really unveiling the way everyone was hoping it would.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, Park City was awarded funds from the FTA. It's called the Low and No Emissions Grant. They received that last August, and then they put in such a good application with so much detail, we were able to turn around and get buses built to their specifications very quickly and get them deployed, as you mentioned, tomorrow.
Yeah, very exciting.
So last year when we talked to you, I think that you had about 67 buses deployed, as you call it, across the country. What are your numbers now? Or maybe they had just been ordered and not yet deployed.
Yeah, we had about that many deployed. These buses will be numbers, the sixth bus will be 109 buses. So for Park City, I think that's our 16th city to be using the buses. What's happened, the market has really just popped open.
Right.
Park City is still on the front end of that, but we've got several hundred orders that we are working to fill they'll be coming because people are understanding and accepting that this technology is here to stay, and that Proterra really believes that in the next decade or so that you likely will not see diesel buses on the road anymore, because this technology makes so much sense from an economic and from an environmental perspective.
Right. So let's talk about the relative miles per gallon when it transfers over. Of course, in an electric bus, there's no gallon. There is no fuel. It's zero emissions. But when you figure everything in, the electricity needed to charge it, and all of the, maybe you could even call it carbon footprint, how does it all figure out, if you can explain that?
Yeah, good question. So we believe that the application of electric vehicle technology has the highest value and highest impact on a mass transit bus. And here's the reason why, if you think about it. There's several reasons. One, as you mentioned, the federal testing for our bus shows that we have an equivalent miles per gallon of 22 miles per gallon. And that's just measured by British thermal units when you look at the heat that it takes to run that, compared to, say, 4 or 5 miles per gallon on a diesel bus, or a CNG bus for that matter. So you're 4 or 5 times more efficient. And then because you don't have an internal combustion engine, your maintenance is significantly less expensive, maybe 50% less expensive on average. And so what ends up happening, you end up saving maybe $35,000 to $40,000 a year on your maintenance alone if you're driving the average 35 to 40,000 miles a year that a bus drives. And so the next reason this makes so much sense is the heavy utilization of buses. A bus drives 3 to 4 times as many miles a year as a passenger vehicle. So the more miles you drive, the more savings you get. It also works because you've got a really big vehicle, so you can put lots of batteries on. And if you look at the way a bus operates, it's lots of starting and stopping. You've got a high torque motor, electric motor that's built for that. And you have regenerative braking. So when you stop, you're actually generating up to 30% of the energy again and recapturing that. So all of those pieces make a lot of sense. And then as you see on the Park City route, it is a defined route. It just goes back and forth all day long. So we don't get range anxiety. We know where the charger is. We know that we know exactly the miles we're going to run. We know when the bus is going to get charged. So we never worry about that. All those reasons. And then, of course, the one that I haven't even mentioned that may be the most important is that buses operate in urban settings. And when you have an electric bus, it's quiet and there's no tailpipe. So there's no emissions, no local emissions.
If you're just joining us, we're having a conversation with Alan Westenskow. He's the director of business development for Proterra. And you're going to see his buses moving around a direct route between Kimball Junction and the transit center here in Park City. Now, in addition to that, the composite weighs less than metal. So we've got a weight advantage. And also, I think traditionally with diesel, as I recall from our earlier conversation a year ago, the cost of ownership was calculated over a 12-year period because there's 30% less moving parts and it's much more efficient. You feel that the vehicles will be on the road for a longer period of time. And because of that, if you amortize over 15 years, the savings even gets better.
Yeah, that's right. We one of the innovations that Proterra did, we're the only company that I'm aware of anywhere that builds a mass transit bus from the ground up. It's purpose-built. It was designed to be an electric bus. If you try to put an internal combustion engine on, it'd be a disaster. But it works really well. We've designed it so the batteries all go on the bottom where you want batteries. It makes it so that it drives really, with the weight center really low to the ground, it drives well. But it also allows us to put more energy on the bus. With it being lighter, it's significantly lighter with a carbon fiber reinforced composite structure. And so we're able to get take the weight off of the body and maybe and allow it to put more batteries on. Other companies who build these buses, they take a metal bus and they try to retrofit it to put batteries and electric drivetrain. And we just find that if you're going to do it, you have to do it right. And to get the range and make the durability, you want to be able to build it from the ground up.
These batteries are going to be sitting between the wheel wells at the bottom part, pretty far away from the passengers. Will there be savings or gains in maneuverability in the snow because that weight is between the axles versus a diesel bus that has all the weight behind the back axle?
That's a good question. We actually, you may have seen there was a Proterra bus during the Sundance Film Festival. We brought it up for Park City to just get used to it and let people know what was coming. And the comment from the transit folks who operated that bus was that it was the best bus they'd ever run in the snow for exactly the reason you said. The center of gravity is a lot lower to the ground, and so it just plows through. In fact, we joke that you ought to put some snow plows on the front of those buses and just get them double duty.
That's good. And we know there was a lot of snow during Sundance this year. We all remember that. Let's talk about battery technology. So even since we spoke to you about a year ago, I think the proliferation of, say, Nissan, Leafs, and Teslas in this town has been huge, and people are becoming more and more familiar with it. So let's talk about lithium-ion batteries, because it's my understanding that these are the batteries that allow the high torque, is it, or the immediate power transfer. And talk about lithium to begin with.
Sure. So lithium-ion is the battery technology that has developed. It's what you see in most of the electric vehicles, and it's what allows us to have the high-density storage in a single place, and then it allows to be able to deploy that energy very quickly and very well so that you're able to get a constant source of power. But the most significant two things. One, we're able to put it together in a way that's first and foremost safe. And that's the most important thing, especially on a moving vehicle. We want it to be safe. But secondly, we want to be able to give enough energy density so that you have range. You can travel a long distance without having to charge the bus all the time or worry about that.
Okay, so this is more about the lithium-ion portion of it, because I know there are batteries developed with other compounds. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. And a lot of times you'll see a lot of batteries will be lithium ion, right. Say, for example, on the anode or the cathode, and then you'll have a different chemistry on the other side. So lithium ion is a big name for the type of chemistry on one side, but then you'll have, for example, these buses are using what's called lithium titanate oxide, and it's a chemistry that has been developed. The batteries on this particular bus were initially developed by Toshiba, and they are a less dense energy, but they allow the bus to charge very quickly. So when you go to Kimball Junction and you see the charger, it's a really heavy charger. It's putting 350 kilowatts of power in and charging really fast. But that chemistry on the buses in Park City allows it to top off in 5 to 10 minutes. So that's the way this route works, so that they actually could run this 24/7 if they wanted to and make sure there's always enough energy. So there's less energy density with that chemistry. We've actually come up with a new chemistry. So we have two offerings for different applications. So if Park City wanted to run buses, for example, in other parts of the community, and they just wanted to plug them in overnight, they weren't running this route that's really heavy utilization back and forth from Kimball Junction. We have another battery chemistry that allows us to put up to 440 kilowatt hours of storage, which ends up giving us over 200 miles of energy range, of range on a bus with a single charge. So it depends on the application. Mm-hmm. This is the perfect application for the LTO chemistry on the battery, where you want to just be able to charge it and keep it topped off all the time. Other applications use this other technology we've developed.
So the topped-off technology, I believe you had a test recently. Was it Seattle?
Yeah, that's right.
So it was a duty cycle of 24 hours, and it was 365 days, and it never had to be plugged in because it would go, and correct me if I'm wrong, into the either overhead or down below charging station, and it would get topped off and keep going.
That's right. So you'll see there's an overhead charger at Kimball Junction, and it was the same bus, same technology in Seattle. They wanted to run it. They actually ran it for 3 months straight, 24/7, to demonstrate a full year of normal use. So it was like 34,000 miles, which is a normal year of use. And you're right. So those buses are designed so that if you wanted to, you could run that bus all day and all night and never have to pull it off and charge it. So like you said, it's a different application. And it was an innovation that Proterra figured out about 6 or 7 years ago to say, hey, listen, with where the battery technology existed then, we figured, hey, this works really well on a bus because it goes in a circle. We know where the route is, and it allows us to be able to get a charge every time we stop and let people on and off for, say, 5 minutes or so, which is how these buses will work.
Okay. And the actual charging apparatus, there's no direct connection. There's a space of air in between them, slight like a toothbrush.
Actually, these do have that would be an inductive charge. These have a conductive charge, which is actually more efficient, but it's up in the air, so it's away from the public. It's on top of the bus, and it's actually automated. So if you see it, the bus will pull in, and what will happen is the charger, it's actually a level one autonomy vehicle. It actually, the bus and the charger communicate, and the charger will, the bus will lock in, and the charger will actually find where it needs to go and charge automatically. Once it's topped off, it'll pull off, and then the bus can go away.
Now, if the batteries are improved technologically, will we be able to upgrade to the new technology?
Yeah, of course. The batteries are built so that you could, the buses are built so you can go back and forth. If Park City decided that they wanted these buses to run on a different type of route where they didn't want to have the ability to do the top off of fast charging throughout the day and night, we could just replace those batteries and integrate a different technology on. So the bus is, the way to think about the bus is the platform. And as other technology continues to develop, you can continue to add that technology on for many, many years to come.
Wow. Last year when we spoke with you, I think we also talked about some trucks, some big commercial use semi-trucks that were using your technology. Was that right?
Well, I would say that, so we don't use any, our technology right now is only used on mass transit buses because it's, like I said, it's really the best application. Mm-hmm. That being said, because we are building our own batteries now, and we've hired, I think it's arguably the best heavy-duty battery engineering team really anywhere in the world. We're building these heavy-duty batteries in Burlingame, California. And it's a pretty cool sight to see these batteries being built. And the application, the thing that's exciting is that while the best application right now is on an electric a bus, it could also be transferred to any other heavy-duty application, like a truck or a train or a boat, or anything you can think of that right now maybe uses diesel fuel that would benefit from using a heavy-duty battery application.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about the environmental impacts of retiring a battery. I know that you will take the battery out of these buses after they've been used up just 20%. You repurpose them, you use them where, and then what happens at 0%?
Yeah, good question. So we do take the batteries off, typically 70 to 80% of what we call the state of health. So once only, like you said, 20 to 30% of the energy has been used, once the battery degrades to that level, we pull it off. It still works, but we want to make sure that the bus has enough energy to continue to meet its route. And so the battery itself will last for 12 years. We just want to make sure there's enough energy. So we'll take that off, and we could put it in any other number of storage or applications. Could be stationary storage, so you could put it up next, you know, to with a solar panel, for example. You could put it in as a grid management type system, where you've got spikes during the day with the grid, and you could use that to balance your load.
So I have solar panels on my house. Uh-huh. Could I feasibly purchase one of your retired batteries, hook it up, because we've all been waiting for this Tesla home battery to come out, right?
Right.
But this could do it. Okay, sign me up, Alan.
Right.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. Now, the regenerative braking capabilities. You state that you have 30% of the power that can be recaptured. Can you talk about that technology?
Yeah, what happens is the way to think about driving one of these buses, it's like driving a big electric golf cart. If you've ever driven a golf cart, you really don't use the brake very much. The golf cart just kind of slows down. And it's because the engine is actually slowing that down. And the way to think about it is it has an electric motor in it, and the electric motor is turning one way when it has energy being put into it to power the vehicle. And what's really happening is the motor is just going the other direction and generating electricity from the mass of the vehicle stopping or slowing down. And so when you're doing that, you're not using the brakes so much. And this is the same technology you see on a lot of hybrid and other electric vehicles. This isn't new. It's just a good application with a transit bus, which is starting and stopping a lot.
Yeah. Lynn, these are really cool-looking buses.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, space age. Tell me about what you're doing at your house again. You've got solar panels on top of the roof, and you want to be able to,
store.
On a sunny day, capture and store energy for later use.
Right, and then eventually I think the goal is that you're off-grid.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that you mentioned that I didn't answer is the impact of a bus. And I think it's worth noting a couple of things. One, when you take a diesel bus off the road, just an average, kind of traveling diesel bus, you're eliminating 100,000 gallons of diesel fuel over the life of that 12-year life of that bus. So it's hard for me to even imagine what 100,000 gallons looks like, but right. These buses, when you're getting 4 miles per gallon, it's a lot of diesel fuel. And then when you are eliminating that, especially if you have a plan like Park City has, to be able to have all of its electricity coming from renewable, carbon zero sources as the city has implemented in the next few years, so that your zero emission or zero carbon going in on the generation and there's no tailpipe coming out, you would be able to, on average, reduce the CO2 emissions or the pounds of CO2 being generated by about 3 million pounds over a 12-year life, depending on the technology you're comparing that against.
Wow.
And this direct route from Kimball Junction to the Park City Transit Center, Lynn, you told me earlier that there are a couple of stops. There's Whole Foods, not Whole Foods.
The Canyons,
and then
and Fresh Market.
At Fresh Market, okay. How often are they going to run, do you know?
I don't know what the city's final plan is. I know they're going to run them early morning till late at night to be able to provide really easy access from Park City and then in Summit County to Kimball Junction, where you've got that high population and high density. So I don't know what the city's determined. But like you mentioned, they have the ability to run these buses all day and all night if they wanted to. There's no need to bring these buses in and charge them in the depot. They have a depot charger, actually. They can charge the buses there if they need to, but they're designed so that they can actually run them as much as they need to. And in the wintertime, when you're generating more heat, then it makes it so that it's not a problem to keep them charged all the time.
Right. So the idea is, I think, with this route that it is what they're calling the first or phase one of the bus rapid transit. So it's like, it because it has so few stops and it is a direct route, they're predicting that, every 10 minutes or so, that's the length of the route. So, of course, it's traffic dependent, but these buses also, even though we don't have a dedicated bus lane, there is the ability to pull onto the shoulder and around if needed. So, and that is coming as more and more of this transit and transportation program is developed, both with the city and Summit County and regional collaboration. Asking about disposal of the batteries, what happens at the end? I have no idea.
So after the battery, we pull it off, after it's used its second life, so let's say that the first 4 to 6 years that battery gets used, and once it gets to that 70% to 80% state of health, we pull the battery off, and we would put it into a second life, like you talked about. It could be for stationary storage or any other number of applications, because it has a lot of energy storage on it still. At that point, we've designed the batteries so that the metals that are valuable that we'd want to recycle are easy to pull out. So we take those metals and pull them out and are able to recycle them and repurpose them for some other use. There's a lot of value in everything there. We can repurpose the the actual casing. There's actually four components to a battery. There's the cell that usually look like the little cylinders or the pouch, and then you have the actual module where they all work together, and then you have the pack where they're encased, and then you have the energy management system all together. And we're able to divide those up as needed to be able to recycle them as appropriate.
Alan Westensko, he's the Director of Business Development for Proterra. Proterra designs and builds the buses that will make up the electric express route between Kimball Junction and the Park City Transit Center. Thanks for joining us this morning.
That interview.
Great information. And I also wanted to say, even though you're a business developer, you sort of sound like a chemist as well. Is there a background in there somewhere?
No.
That interview first aired on KPCW's Cool Science Radio Thursday, June 22nd. Well, coming up, we'll talk about golf parks here on Mountain Money.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
948, high today, 86. A little warmer tomorrow. It's 69 degrees here in Park City. Well, the business of golf is changing. Golf parks are becoming popular. They're a more casual way to play the game. For example, you don't have a golf cart. Instead, you're surfing the course on a motorized longboard. That's how players get around at the new signature Jack Nicklaus Golf Park at Red Ledges. It's the first of its kind. John Wells and Christy Dillaway talked to Red Ledges Chief Operating Officer Mitchell Burns on Friday, June 16th. On the Morning Mix edition. Let's hear that interview.
Joining us now in the studio, Mitchell Burns, Chief Operating Officer of Red Ledges. He oversees all sorts of stuff, property, club operations for the beautiful private mountain community that it is. His focus is on strategic development, including real estate, amenity expansion efforts, all sorts of things. And we're here to talk, well, we always love to talk about Mitchell about all sorts of stuff, but specifically we're going to talk about the new golf park. But welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be here. Great to see you guys.
Oh, it's good to see you. This concept of the golf park is absolutely fascinating. And so many people are intimidated by golf with the rules, with the etiquette, with the this's and the that's. And this is a whole new way of looking at having fun with golf. Why don't you tell us about this park?
Well, yeah, I think you framed it perfectly. What we've noticed is that, especially with like the beginner player or somebody that doesn't have a lot of time, you know, getting out and playing 18 holes on a championship course and spending 4.5-5 hours doing it is just not feasible. So we wanted to mix it up, and this was actually kind of the brainchild of Jack Nicklaus, who came up with this idea. He actually named it the Golf Park because he wanted to mix, first of all, he wanted to make golf approachable and friendly, but he also wanted to mix uses on it. So this is a course where we encourage you to bring your dog with you while you're playing. We encourage you to take 6 children with you or your grandchildren with you and play as an eightsome around that course.
Maybe barefoot.
Or that's the way I like to play it. After working all day, I get off and, get out there around 6 o'clock and I just grab 3 clubs, go barefoot, and my dog Mozzie goes with me, and it's a dog walk and I get to play a little bit of golf. It's very enjoyable.
And it's beautiful.
Well, of course it is.
JW was giddy a couple weeks ago after he did it.
I had so much fun. And, I was on that surfboard. Well, it's not really a surfboard, but it's kind of like a surfboard.
It's not really a hoverboard?
Well, no. But it'd be neat if it was. This one actually has wheels. But you put your clubs on the front and you put the cooler in the back and you jump on this thing. And when you bend to the left, the thing goes to the left. When it goes to the right, there's a couple different speeds. And boy, it speeds up golf because you go directly to your ball. Like if everybody's on a hoverboard, everyone goes to their own golf ball.
Oh, so each person has their own.
Yeah, they're individual units. And the way we describe it, or the best way to describe it, would be it's like a longboard, a skateboard, but it's motorized. And so, and there's a carrier for your golf clubs. So you feel like you're skateboarding around, you know, off the hills and around the mounds of the golf course. And sometimes we get, you know, kids that'll come out and they'll just take the golf board, which is the brand, and they'll take it out for a spin and just ride around.
That's what I was thinking.
Like the park.
Yeah.
Just go high side on the hills.
Well, you know, it's funny. When people first get on it, they're not quite sure what to do with it. But by about, you know, the third or fourth hole, they've got it down and they're just whipping all over the place. And you know, the way we built this golf park is we have a lot of mounds on it so that if you hit an errant shot, instead of it helps deflect your shot towards the green. And so those mounds are also fun to ride the golf board across. So it's like a little terrain park. And, yeah, it's been very popular.
How do you keep the timing going if people are foursomes, sixsomes with their dogs?
It's loosey-goosey. It's basically the only rule that they have out there is that there are no rules. And for people that have wanted to get into golf and they see, you know, the nice little tucked-in shirts and the this's and the that's and all the etiquette – you know, this is really relaxed. It's pretty cool. So if you're going to play the golf park, you got to be chilled anyway.
Well, that's what I found intimidating about golf was the timing and people behind you who are good getting frustrated if you're struggling. And I just would pick up half my balls and be like, yeah, good enough. I'll just carry this to the next place.
Yeah, so that's exactly what we wanted to avoid was somebody feeling intimidated because there was somebody standing behind them on the tee, you know, with their hand on their hips and glaring at you. So the whole idea, and that's why we call it, again, the park, right? If you're going out there to play it, you're there to have fun. If you come up on a slow group, just go around them, right? And
or ride your golf board around on the hills for a little bit.
Yeah, or stop and get a hot dog or something, you know. But and I think just when people know that, especially with the beginner player, they really become engaged and enthusiastic about the game because the pressure just isn't there. The one thing I did want to point out, we talk about, you know, the beginner player, but this was also built to the standards of a Jack Nicklaus signature course. So it's a very high quality course. Matter of fact, it's the only Jack Nicklaus signature golf park in existence. It's the first one and only one he's ever done. So if you're an accomplished player, it still plays like a real golf course. So you can go out there and you can hone your game. And what we did is we put two holes on each green. One is the standard 4.5-inch hole, and then the other is an 8-inch hole. So if you're an accomplished player, you can play to that smaller hole. If you're a beginner, you just putt towards the larger hole, and it becomes a lot easier. And you can, and we have, you know, mixed groups going out of good players and beginning players, and they both have, and we've got something for both of them.
So Emily Elliott and I went out a couple of weeks ago. We just had a blast, and we're both golfers, and we really enjoyed the park. But then afterwards, we went out on the front nine on the championship course, and oh boy, that thing is in such good shape. That course is looking good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Our superintendent, that's going to be music to his ears. He's going to want to raise now that you said that.
Oh, yeah, and that bent grass and everything and the red rocks, it's just spectacular. I'll also say that the last couple of years when I get out there, because you have me out every once in a while and we have a lot of fun, there's you know, some construction going on, people building houses, but there's something about it. I mean, exponentially, there are so many houses under construction right now.
Oh, yeah. Over the last couple of years, things have taken off. You know, if we went back 3 or 4 years ago, we probably had, you know, a dozen homes there, maybe 20. But over the last 3 years, we've been building about 50 or 60 a year. So we're up to 125 complete, but we got 65 under construction and 30 that are in the architectural review. So 30 more that are going to start in the next couple of months.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's just a lot going on out there everywhere you look.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and there's, of course, the Drysdale tennis group. You've got horseback riding. You've got and I've got to ask you about Jack Nicklaus. You actually rode around with him in a cart, and he told you about, like, strategically why he would put a trap here and what his thinking was for this type of hole and this type of, you know, so that must have been fascinating.
Yeah, you know, that was when I first came to Red Ledges about 11 years ago. The first job I had was actually, you know, like a construction manager for the helping with the golf course. So I got to spend a lot of time with Jack Nicklaus. He came out, I think it was 5 or 6 times during the construction and design, and just watching him, you know, go from a raw piece of land and to strategically think about, okay, where do I want these this layout to go? And then, you know, the process of how you'd clear, you know, you'd stake it out, and then he'd come and look at it and adjust it, and then you'd clear the center line, and then he'd come out and adjust it. But just listening to him talk about, okay, how far does the average person hit a drive? Okay, I'm going to put a bunker there.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah.
Or, you know, as you enter this green, how am I going to protect it with a bunker, or how am I going to contour it so that the ball either feeds onto the green or feeds away from the green? You know, and in our first course, the 18-hole championship course, you know, that was very much a player's course. But when we went to do the golf park, he kind of did a 180-degree flip. He went from, hey, I want to protect the green, to I want to make the green inviting. So if you hit the ball, you know, 3 or 4 yards off the green, it rolls back onto it instead of rolling away from it.
Exactly.
And you know.
So I can feel good about myself?
Yes. This, you feel like a hero when you play this course, you know.
And it's not that, you know, stuffy or anything like that. So if you're new to Park City, or you have not been out to this spectacular private mountain community, I mean, you've got everything out there. Get out there and get a tour. It's beautiful.
I agree with you. It's. I love the place. I live out there. I work out there. It's fantastic.
Mitchell Burns, Chief Operating Officer, Red Ledges. Also, Randy and I haven't started working on it yet, but we are back in business for the Music Crawl Year 3, and you're going to be our sponsor, our only sponsor, and we're delighted to have you again.
Thank you. We look forward to that. It's a great, great event.
Well, our thanks to Jason Hodel, CEO of Skull Candy, Alan Westenskow, Business Development Director of Proterra, and Mitchell Burns, Red Ledges Chief Operating Officer. And thanks to our great sponsors for Mountain Money, Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Express, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City Columbus Pacific Properties. Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you. Thank you for listening to KPCW Park City. We're at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County and 91.9 FM in Wasatch County. Of course, always you can stream us live on kpcw.org and on the KPCW app. 69 degrees currently in Old Town, looking for a high today of 86, and it's time to go to NPR.